Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F., and I hope it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, are you here?
I'm here.
Oh, it's working like a charm. They pulled the old switcheroo on me, Wendy. I'm upstairs. I'm not in the regular Showcase studio.
Is tree time here?
Yeah.
Taking down our decorations?
Yep.
Oh, I don't want that to happen.
No, I don't either.
Can't we leave it up all year?
You know, people always say you could do that. They say you could take your Christmas tree and not just make it a Christmas tree, but whatever the holiday is, you can put things in it for St. Patrick's Day or Valentine's Day or whatever. I don't think that would work. Do you?
Don't Steve and Johnny do that?
Oh, do they?
They leave a tree up all year, and then it's
because
like an
of
Easter
Les Paul?
Tree.
Is it somehow connected to Les Paul? Because Les Paul loved trees, so we leave our tree up all year, so Les Paul always has something to look and smile at. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Maybe they do. I don't know. But if you went to somebody's house and you saw a tree and they had hearts for Valentine's Day or even smaller trees for Arbor Day, wouldn't you go, oh, that's weird? I would go, that's weird.
I would say lazy.
Lazy. That's the better word. I'm sorry I said weird. I meant to say lazy. You know the phrase, sometimes you hear somebody say this, I don't want to tell tales out of school, but, did you ever hear anyone say that?
Just a lot of old people.
Will say that.
I haven't heard that recently, Bill. I got to tell you.
I don't want to tell tales out of school, but, and then they tell you some secret. I'm in that situation now with Steve Bertrand. There's something I want to tell him, a tale out of school, but I feel like I'd be betraying somebody.
Well, now you have to say.
Should I do it? Steve, is that right?
Yeah,
I
think so.
So during our bonus hour from noon to 1, Wendy and I are on the stream while you're doing the Wintrust business lunch.
Right.
And Judy Pilak comes in and she does the news. So yesterday on the show, actually the last 2 days on the show, Judy has told both Wendy and myself and everybody listening on the stream that she will be the next big lottery winner. She's going to win the Super Bowl Powerball $1 billion lottery.
Wow.
Right? Yeah.
That's, okay.
Yeah. So then we were discussing how you would divvy up, like if you all of a sudden had around $1 billion, who would you give that to? You'd give it to family members, maybe some friends, people you've known all your life. And Judy said, I'd give it to everybody. Like if somebody needed something, I'd give it to them. And then she paused and she said, except Steve Bertrand.
Well, that's not nice.
No, it's not.
That hurts a little.
What's behind that? Is there something behind that?
I don't know.
She also said they've known each other a very long time. And I think it's just like the work couple, you know?
Is that what it is?
Maybe.
Well, it's sad for her because I'm going to win this week.
Oh, my God.
And when you win, just to show her you're the better person, you should give her a car or something.
Right. We were talking about how I'm going to work harder at it this week.
Are you really playing, Steve?
I didn't even try. I just bought the tickets on Wednesday. Today, is it today the next one? Yeah.
When they announce the winners, will you have the tickets out and looking at the numbers? Will you just wait and eventually look at the numbers?
I'll carry them around in my pocket for a week until I need to buy gas, check the number at the gas station. Sorry, not a winner.
But what part of you has even the smallest belief, even the smallest of small beliefs that you could be the winner? You don't think you're going to win, right?
Well, I you could win.
Someone has to.
Eventually someone will win.
Yeah.
What's the harm in, you know, having the hope and having, you know, it's $2.
I think what they're selling more than the fact that you could be a billionaire is just simply the momentary dream. Because deep down,
that's
you know,
all it is. Sure.
The
right.
Odds are so against you. But you're just buying, you're paying for a dream, right? You're paying a couple of bucks.
Thank you, Dickie Downer.
To dream. Sorry. We'll get back to buried or cremated in just a moment.
Or frozen. You forgot frozen.
You know, I'm in the office with Jasmine, and Jasmine turns and looks at me, and she goes, this is a Friday. It's supposed to be the best day of the week, and all they're talking about is being buried or cremated. And now we're talking about how your chance of being a billionaire will never, ever happen.
You get so mad, though, that people are even trying.
No,
it's like you're like, why do you even bother? Just whatever.
I don't get mad at it. It's just it's funny how different things appeal to different people. Like I know, and I would. When do you know this? I had a gambling problem. I gambled way too much. But even me, a degenerate gambler, knew it wasn't the lottery wasn't going to be the way to win the money.
Yeah, but you were doing it for different reasons. You were gambling. I mean. Well, I don't know that. I was going to say you were gambling to make money, but you were probably gambling for the thrill of it, too.
It was it's a weird combination of both. But like if you gamble on the things I gambled on, you know, which was sports team. Like, all right. So in any given sports team, I had almost a 50-50 shot of winning. It was either going to be the team I picked or the other team. But with the lottery, you can't even compound them. It's the numbers are just inconceivable.
Sure, but when you won that game, it wasn't going to change your world.
Right, right.
And this would change your world.
This would change, yeah, and the world of my children and their children.
And me.
And everybody around, unless right. Judy wins, in which case, not Steve.
Apparently not.
But we played the game yesterday, Steve, of what would you do with the money, and everybody's answer. Again, your brain can't figure it out, because there's things that you dream about, and there's things you don't even bother dreaming about, because you go, well, I'll never be able to afford that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't do that as much as I used to. I actually, let me tell you this for a time, and this will mess with you. I stopped playing the big games and would only buy a lotto ticket.
Because why?
I only need about $5 million.
See, I'm with you on that. 40 is too much, or $400 million. What's it up to now?
Yeah, and the odds are too great. The odds are better in the lotto. I can get by with $6, $7
million. I'm so with you. So did you buy a lotto ticket? Because when everybody's going crazy with the Powerball, I like to go buy like a little lotto or whatever it's called now.
I'm concerned that I'm being made out as this big lottery player. I'm really
Do you only, because most people only do it when it reaches this sort of a number. When the number is so obscenely high that you go, I can't afford not to take a shot at this.
Well, I probably would not have had a ticket for tonight, but now that we've talked about it, I'm going to have to stop and get
one. Oh.
Now I got to get one too, and I haven't been out of the house in 4 weeks.
There'll be in Wendy's suburb. There'll just be in the snow. You'll see trails of one leg and a limp, one leg and a limp, one leg. I wonder who went this way.
Why don't you start now, Wendy? Drawings at 10.
All right.
And then we can, Steve and I here in the studio, can bet on whether or not you'll get to the 7-Eleven in time. That's where the real money is, and that's sort of a bet. That's your wager. All right,
ye of little faith.
I have this strange story for you to open the show. What do you think is the trendiest baby name in the history of our country? Now, let me explain the parameters of how they determine what the trendiest baby name is. They looked year to year at who was naming their boys what and who was naming their daughters what, and they figured out that all of a sudden there was a tremendous spike in a certain name, and that spike only lasted a very, very short time.
Is it Spike?
It is not Spike. No, Wendy. An excellent guess, but that would have been a trick answer. It is not Spike.
A girl's name or a boy's name?
I will give you that clue. It is a girl's name.
Oh.
Elvis.
Elvis is primarily a boy's name, Steve. Although you could name your daughter Elvis, but she'd be teased a lot.
So it's a name now that's making a trend?
It is still a name. You don't see that many girls named this anymore. And it's one of those names where when you stop and think about it, you go, well, why would that be? It's a pretty good name. I know people with that name. They're all fine, upstanding people. Why did this name fall out of favor? So it's certainly a name that you've heard of. But I'll give you a clue. Back in the 1940s, all of a sudden, this name was all the rage. 5.5% of all girls in the United States were named this over a 1.5-year period. In 1947 and 1948, 5.5% of girls had this name.
But your point is it went away. So
yes.
It's not like Mary.
It not only went away,
Susan.
Steve. It
Susan.
Went away. No.
No, it's got to be something that was momentary.
Right. It
so
was
47, 48?
In 1947.
Maryland.
And no, it's not Maryland.
Edna.
No. Edna. No.
Very popular in the 20s.
No, and it's funny because they show the graph, and I'll hold it up to the microphone so everybody listening can see it. They show the graph, so almost nobody had this name. I mean, it existed, but it was no big deal. It was somewhere around a third of 1%, you know? And then all of a sudden in that year to year and a half, 5.5. So one in 18 or 19 girls had this name.
I'm going to say Bess.
No, it's not Bess. Why? Oh, because of the Trumans?
Yeah, Bess Truman.
Oh, that's a great guess. It is not Bess, but that's an excellent guess. Let's do this. We'll take a break, and then we'll explain the trendiest baby name in the history of the United States and why. That's coming up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
For you to walk by.
Keep waiting. I'm still walking.
Oh, what's your name?
None of your business.
Pretty name. But I'll just call you Linda.
Well, how did you guess?
When I go to sleep, I never count sheep. I count all the charms about Linda.
This song, Linda, came out in 1947. It was so popular in 1947 that in 1948, 5.5% of the girls born in the United States, that's one in 17 or 18, were named Linda because of this song.
I totally believe that.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, I never heard this song before.
Oh, you did it? Never?
No. Who is it?
Who? Buddy Clark, I think, right? Jazz? Yeah, Buddy Clark. Buddy Clark. So the name became incredibly popular for a year to a year and a half, and then the next year, almost nobody named their children Linda anymore. And by children, I mean girls. There's not that many boys named Linda.
I know a ton of Lindas in their 50s. I can think of four right off the top of my head.
There were, when I went to school, there were several girls named Linda, and we had a bunch of neighbors named Linda. That's the way it is in the United States. You must have at least one neighbor named Linda. That's been a law for a long, long time. But now, like, I was thinking of my daughter's friends. I don't think there's a single Linda in the bunch. I don't think.
I don't think younger people are named Linda.
But, no, it dropped out.
Think about it. Yeah. I just had this discussion with some girlfriends. There's no Debbies anymore. There's no Nancys anymore. There's no Phyllises anymore.
There aren't any more Phyllises.
Think of all those names that are
right.
gone. Kaboot.
Right. The name that was like the rebellious girl's name when I was a kid at my school, I can't speak for you guys, but if somebody named their daughter Jennifer, that was really very, very flashy.
Really?
Yeah. There were a couple of Jennifers and people would be like, "Why?" And there was, I think I may have mentioned this on the show before. In our school, in St. Damien's School, if you were a boy, you had one of 10 names and there were no surprises. There was William, there was Tom, there was Andy, there was Mark, there was Mike, there was David, Steve. I'm trying to remember what the other ones would be. But there were no surprises. And then all of a sudden in fourth grade, this kid came in, he transferred from another school and his name was Morgan.
Oh.
And it threw us for a loop. We didn't know what to make of it. It was the bad seed. It really was.
Well, I was one of two Wendy's in a school of 2,000 people.
That's
it? So there weren't very many Wendy's.
But now it's become very, very popular.
Because of the redheaded hamburger girl.
Is that why?
I don't know. I never really... It came from Peter Pan, obviously.
That's the first documented time that anyone was named Wendy, right?
And that's why my brother and sister wanted to name me that. After Henrietta, that was my brother's first choice.
So, Wendy, when you were born, your mom and dad left this at the discretion. It was totally up to your brother and sister. They could have named you whatever they wanted.
Well, like I said, Henrietta was the first choice, and my mom's like,
wow.
I don't think so. And that's when they decided on Wendy. That's the story they tell me. I don't know. They've lied to me my whole life. I was probably adopted.
If my parents had let me name my brother, I would have a brother named Batman right now.
And your brother would probably love that.
It'd be really cool to introduce my brother. But you know my brother Batman.
I do.
Was there a time, be honest, when you were a kid that you thought you might have been adopted?
Yes.
What brought that on? Was there anything specific that brought it on, or was it just
There's
a general
kind of a
feeling?
Big age difference. My brother and sister are 2 years apart, but they're like 7 and 9 years older than me, and I don't look like them, really.
Isn't that weird?
I don't.
I was sure. There were times when I was a kid, because everyone in my family, my mom and dad and brother, have extremely dark hair and dark features, and I was positive. And I used to say to them all the time, you can tell me. I'm old enough now. You can tell me. And I tell you what? Just tell me the truth. I know I don't look like any of you. I don't act like any of you. I must be adopted. And I would have been okay with it. It would have explained a lot. You know, in my head, I'm like, well, that things would make more sense if they would just come true. It could be true with me. But it turns out I wasn't.
I created a whole backstory because I look very much like my cousin Susie, more so than anyone else. You've met my cousin Susie.
Yeah.
And so I went on to explain that Susie had me out of wedlock and didn't want to get in trouble. So my mom just decided to raise me. And they all looked at me like, what? I thought that was it for sure.
I'm not trying to top you, but my story was there used to be these books called Whatever Became Of. This is long before the internet. So what these books were is they would feature like profiles of 25 or 30 or 40 stars from years and years ago. And if you had seen them in movies or television shows, you could kind of catch up with what they've been doing. It's a very popular book series when I was a kid. So there was this kid actor that I looked a lot like, and I was sure that that was me, that they took me and adopted me and changed my name. And then my parents explained to me that this child actor was around in the early 1940s, and I would be far, far older if any of the story was true.
Boy, look at us wanting the attention of making up our own backstory.
I know. That's weird. That's not even, it's not just weird, it's almost obscenely weird.
It's like, a good thing we're together now.
Why couldn't we just accept the fact that we were different from our families? But no, it'd be better to just go, well, I can't really be these people's child. I'm so totally different from them.
Well, that's because we wanted cooler parents.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. That's it comes down to that, kind of, doesn't it?
A little bit.
Although I don't think either of my daughters ever believed that they were adopted, or they've never brought it. Like, I used to bring it up every day. Like, something would happen, and I go, ugh, I'm obviously adopted. But my daughters have never mentioned it once, ever.
You know what, though? It's so different now that there are people that are adopted that no one blinks an eye. When we were growing up, if you heard someone was adopted, that was not the norm.
Isn't that something?
I think now it's like, really, who cares?
Yeah. It's so open, and it should be openly accepted.
Yes,
but
absolutely.
It was like, it wasn't a novelty when we were kids, but it was like a strange aura at the time, and it never should have been. I don't know why it was.
Yeah, I don't either.
It doesn't make any sense. All right, let's go to some phone calls. Diane has something for you, Wendy. Hi, Diane. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. So now I've got two things to tell you. First, I'm going to comment on the last thing you were talking about. I went to a parochial school,
yeah,
and the nuns would refer to a broken home. He came from a broken home.
Oh, really?
Yes, I remember hearing that.
So they would throw a stigma on the just the mere fact that a child was adopted, there's some sadness.
No.
If they were bad.
If they were bad.
It was a broken home if the parents had divorced.
Oh.
Which not many people did. I mean, come on.
I know. Well, here's the reason that I called you originally. That was like a sidebar. You were talking about the name Wendy.
Yeah.
First being documented. Okay, do you know where that came from? History?
Peter Pan.
Okay, fine, but why? Okay, here's the why.
Okay.
she gave us no time.
There was no time to answer. That's all right.
The creators of the movie wanted a name that would flow with wind. And what would go with wind? And they dreamed up the word Wendy. And that's where it came from.
So,
and now you know the rest of the story. Yep.
I talk a lot, too, so I'm like the wind. And Bill never grows up, so he's like
right.
Peter Pan.
It's very similar. So this would be James Barry, then,
yes.
The author of Peter Pan. James Barry is the one probably who came up with that. Is that right, then?
Exactly. Yes.
How about that? Very interesting, Diane. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Diane.
You're welcome.
Have a great weekend. Take care. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
We had somebody that could not hold on, but he was talking about his daughter, whose name is Sophie. This came back to the trendy names, because we were talking about Linda being the absolute trendiest name in the history of the United States. For some reason, and I don't know what it is, in my head I keep thinking it might be Sophia Vergara, but it can't be. The two names, Sophie and Sophia, are at an all-time high in popularity. They always show like the number one through number 10 name amount of children named a certain thing. In the last couple of years, that name has just been through the roof.
Yeah, Sophie, I love how these names come in and out, because I don't understand it always.
What was it, Steve, with that name, though?
Was Sophia was strong when we were naming Emma 21 years
was
ago.
Was it
so
really?
It was
well, Sophia then. Loren was very popular.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think it was just the sound. They actually say sometimes that... it reflects the times. Like, if there are harder times, parents go toward more softer-sounding names, or, you know, there's a real science behind it. But because it often isn't just because of one person, like Wendy, you know, there's just, like, this sort of structural movement toward one name or another one.
But didn't Sophia, for years, it has a very European sound to it.
Right.
Right? Although now, because so many kids have it, that's kind of been watered down. That doesn't really exist so much. But there was a time where if there was a kid coming and her name was Sophia, you go, oh, from where in Europe is she?
A little exotic.
Yeah, very exotic. Yeah.
And I hate to dispute what Diane just called and told us, but according to BehindTheName.com, in the case of the character from J.M. Barrie's play Peter Pan in 1904, the name Wendy was created from the nickname Fwendy. Like
Fwendy.
Fwend, you're my Fwend, given to the author by a young Fwend. That's what it says.
So once again, Barbara Walters' influence on the name game is just through the roof.
Right.
Now, I don't know if this is just a trend where I live on my block, in my neighborhood, in my city.
Okay, Mr. Rogers.
hold on, Fwendy, I'm putting on a new sweater. Can you just be patient for a second? Every boy on the block that I live on, their name starts with a vowel and ends with an N. Their names are Evan, Ethan, Owen, and Aiden. And that's not one family. That's spread out through the block. But
is the block you live on now,
yeah,
or when you were growing up?
No, currently.
But they're popular, trendy names.
But they all have the same kind of cadence, the same kind of sound, starting with a vowel, ending with an N. And those are four names, Evan, Ethan, Owen, and Aiden, that nobody had when we were kids a couple of years ago, right? Did you know anybody with any of those names?
No, there was an Owen on Party of Five, and that's one of my in-laws. Jim's great-grandfather was Owen, or grandfather.
Oh, he was.
Was Owen Turner, yes. Oh.
It's got a cool sound to it. It does. Let's take a quick break. There's a lot more show coming up. We'll get some help about the lottery. We'll talk about the weather. We'll talk about some television shows. The Golden Globes are on Sunday. Something for everybody. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I thought this cold snap was going to break.
They had talked about it. Now, Wendy, this is a big surprise. It was going to be a big surprise, but I'll blow the surprise. Our friend Andy Avalos is en route to the studio to explain to us why it's so cold and when the cold is going to stop.
Oh, I would love to talk to him.
Wouldn't
because
it be fun?
You know, it's raining iguanas in Florida.
I know it is. I know it is.
And I have to make a correction because I said that it was snowing in Fort Lauderdale. It was Tallahassee that it was snowing the other day.
I think I mentioned this on the show yesterday. My sister-in-law, brother-in-law, and nephew were in South Florida, and it was cold. It wasn't snowing. It wasn't cold enough to snow, but it wasn't like, you know, you think about Florida, you think, weather's going to be pretty nice. No, it was pretty cold out there. They got back yesterday a little bit disappointed. No snow, but in Tallahassee, they got, what, an inch and a half or 2 inches of snow?
That's unreal.
That's too much.
My poor cousin moved to Florida, and she sent a little something on Facebook. It was 39 degrees
wow.
where she is in Florida.
Wow.
I mean, that's unheard of.
Yep. So Andy Avalos, on his way in, will explain to us why it is so cold and what we can do and when it'll stop. So that's coming up in just a little
bit. If ever.
Okay, a couple of things. Number one, Steve, are you still within listening of my voice? Are you still close by? No?
Right. He just doesn't want to listen. And
right. He has his
respond.
Fingers in his ears, and he's shaking his head no. And I don't blame him. What I was going to ask him, and I can ask you this too, Wendy, is, has there ever been a book like this Michael Wolff book that is an absolute guaranteed bestseller the second it hits the bookstands?
I got to tell you, I am still trying to read Judy Pilak's book that she gave me.
Geek Love. I bought
yes.
a copy yesterday to take, I'm off next week and I need a book and I'm going to read that book.
I cannot wait to read Michael Wolff's book. And I'm just curious if, is it just Trump haters that want to read it or is it Donald Trump lovers that want to read it? I mean, this seems to be a truthful account.
I have a feeling that anyone who's loyal to President Trump will not want to read the book because he's so against it that you'd almost feel if you were a big supporter of Donald Trump's, you'd feel like you were going against him in purchasing the book, right?
Yeah, but don't you want to know everything you can
I
about
would.
Someone you respect and idolize?
I would. Yeah.
Except
you've seen the text the last couple of days. Anytime we've discussed this, like if that book comes up in the news or
yeah.
if you and I talk about it, the texts come in saying it's just hearsay and you can't believe what you read and it's a fake book. You know,
everything's fake. I don't believe anything from anyone anymore. I mean, really, everything seems fake.
Right.
What's real?
Right. Well, he insists, I heard him, he's making the rounds because he knows he's got a gold mine in front of him. So he's making the rounds on the talk shows today, and he insists that everything in the book is 100% accurate, that he didn't fudge on any
Michael
of the
Wolff.
Facts. Yeah.
And hasn't it been pushed to be released today?
Yeah.
It was supposed to be
midnight,
last week.
Midnight last night.
Okay.
I wonder if part of that is the demand for it, but also, you know, the president was talking about suing to stop publication,
right.
which...
Right.
So get it out.
Well, yeah, it's pretty unusual for that.
Steve, not only unusual, I think unprecedented. I don't think it's ever happened before.
Steven Seagal.
where a president would argue against free speech.
But, well, not just free speech, but just say, here's a book coming out, says bad things about me. We can't have this book. The
right.
book must
well,
be stopped.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, you can do it. There have been... I mean, the Post is coming out this weekend, right?
Right.
I mean, there have been cases where the government's gone to court to try to stop information being published that would be damaging to the U.S.
Right.
But not personally embarrassing or things like that.
But doesn't he realize that every time he condemns the book, every single time he comes out and says this book is filled with lies, shouldn't make a book like this, it shouldn't be published, it shouldn't be purchased, he just sold another copy of the book.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. We'll see how the book sales go. I mean, Wendy, are you really going to go out and buy it and read it?
I don't know if I'm going to buy it. I'm going to look online and see some of the excerpts. And
okay, that's big.
I will take this bet. Now, keep in mind, I'm not allowed to gamble money anymore, so I will bet cookies with either one of you or anybody who wants to bet. the number one bestseller next month. From its point of publication, whether it's today or tomorrow.
That may well be, sure.
It'll have to be.
What?
It'll have to be. Because it's got so much attention, and whether you agree with what's written in there or disagree with it, you want to know what it says, even though you can find the excerpts of all the best parts. Wendy, you found that list a day or two ago.
Yeah.
About the biggest revelations in the book. That was easy to find. So once you know those things, you're not going to be surprised by anything in it. But just the mere existence of all these people. And he says he had cooperation of dozens and dozens of people very, very close to Donald Trump. And they all said basically the same thing, that he's a child. He's a grown-up child.
Michael Wolff, the author, was asked today on the Today Show about the cease and desist order.
Yeah.
And he says, when asked about it, he says, all it does is help sell the book. And
that's true.
Here was his response.
What I say is where do I send the box of chocolates?
His polite way of saying thank you. You just sold so many more copies for me.
Right.
And all the reports are book fury hits Trump where it hurts most, his image. That doesn't surprise me. We've been hearing about how he's kind of childlike in the way he handles things. He's the one, Donald Trump, who wants to keep his image strong, but we've all kind of heard things. This isn't surprising me.
Right. So is the new revelation in that it's people close to him, that it's people on his own side saying this? Because anyone who's seen him has made that summation that he has a lot of the characteristics of a six-year-old. We've all said that privately. But now is it just the mere fact that it's people close to him saying it? Is that the big deal?
Well, it's significant. I mean, you have Steve Bannon saying very public things about Trump's, the president's son and son-in-law in this meeting, calling them treason. But yeah, if you go beyond that, you have many other people in the West Wing with their nicknames for the president.
Right.
None of them complimentary. I mean, it seems to be almost unanimous.
Well,
again, what's going to happen with all this? Nothing.
I don't think anything. Yeah. All right. More disturbing news for everybody. Over the last month and a half or 2 months, name after name after name of people, some of the captains of industry, some of the biggest names in Hollywood, some of the biggest names in news, some of the biggest names in sports, have been charged, or at least it's been insinuated that they have harassed women. Another name came forward this morning, very, very disturbing, that of Ben Vereen. Did you hear about this?
No.
When Ben Vereen, now again, as always, we will point out that these are allegations. Nothing's been proved. When Ben Vereen held auditions for Hair at a community theater in Florida back in 2015, the Tony winner said he wanted to break new ground with the rock musical. But in a sickening twist, several young actresses cast in the show claim that the Broadway legend's sexually abusive behavior nearly broke them. The women, all part of the Venice Theater production outside of Tampa, Florida, say that Vereen forced unwanted kisses, hugged them aggressively, stripped naked during an acting exercise, and made degrading comments about their weight, their sex appeal, and their personal lives.
That's not going to turn them on and turn them into a fan of yours by making weight cracks.
You know, many times as we read what the men did or were alleged to have done, I think that exact same thing, Wendy.
It's mean. It's not, it's like...
Right. But don't you see, like, in many of the cases, I'll use Louis C.K. as an example because I think it's one that everyone's familiar with. You say to yourself, I don't think too many women are going to be attracted to you by what you're doing right now.
Exactly.
Right?
But I don't think that's what they really care about. They're just trying to do what they want to do when they want to do
it. Right. I guess so. Two of the actresses told the Daily News that Ben Vereen lured them into his Florida rental home on separate occasions back in September of 2015 under the guise of what they call private rehearsals. Then he pressed himself onto their legs without any warning. Caitlin Terpstra was 22 years old at the time. The other actress who asked not to be identified by only her first name, I'm sorry, Kim, was 23 at the time. Vereen was weeks shy of his 69th birthday. In a lengthy statement to the Daily News on Thursday, Vereen did not deny the accusations. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yesterday we asked how Seth Meyers would handle this. Seth Meyers is hosting the Golden Globe Awards this upcoming Sunday. And Wendy, you and I went out of our way to say yesterday it's going to be a very, very difficult evening for him because his job is to entertain, to keep the show rolling, hopefully for the show to be funny. He's a pretty cutting-edge comic. this is the biggest story in Hollywood all year, way bigger than any movie, way bigger than any TV show. So it's going to be addressed. So how do you do it in a way that's both respectful to any of the women who have been abused, but still keep the evening light and fun? Here's what he said, Seth Meyers. Do we have that? Can we run Seth Meyers? It's coming. Seth Meyers paused a little bit, Wendy, before he said anything. He thought it out. Oh, we'll get to the audio in just a little bit. I'm so anxious to see it, you know, because it really is going to be a very difficult exercise for him. Here's Seth Meyers commenting on how he's going to handle the Golden Globe Awards on Sunday night.
We're just having a constant discussion about it, understanding that the things we're talking about aren't always funny. So it'll be a balance and trying to get the tone right, you know, and also trying to remember that even though it was a really difficult year, people did great work.
Who should be most worried during your monologue?
I will say that the people that should be most worried won't be here for the reasons we alluded to earlier.
That, first of all, that's a great question, right?
Yeah.
Because you know that there are certain people that can be targeted. So there's been some very, very big names involved in this scandal. So do you use those names as a punchline? And if you do use those names as a punchline, is that a cheap laugh? Right?
Yeah, I don't even know if you need to pull out the names.
Well, there's some names, like Jeffrey Tambor is one of those guys who's always at these award shows and always does well. So you can't make a Jeffrey Tambor joke. You can't make a Kevin Spacey joke. You can't be that specific, can you?
I don't know. I'm anxious to see.
It gets very tricky. All right, so Sunday night is the first major award show since this scandal broke. We'll see how it's addressed on Sunday. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more shows. So stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill left. It's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, you're back in studio on Monday, right?
I am, and you are not, correct?
Right. It's part of our new deal with the station that you and I can never be in the same room together again.
Just like the president and vice president.
Right. Because should there be some mishap, they can't afford to lose both of us at the same time. Be awful.
Is this Pierogi the Man?
No, that you're thinking of Portugal the Man. There's no band called Pierogi the Man, although
there should
if Weird Al Yankovic is listening, Wendy would be glad to sell that to you, Weird Al. Did you see what KFC did in response to the controversy the other day between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un over whose button is larger?
Oh, I didn't, Bill. Why don't you
KFC,
tell us?
I'll keep you posted. KFC took action online, spoofing the tweets between our president Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un, his friend, Lil' Kim.
He's don't. To be. See, he's you are just be. Like Donald Trump.
He is, Kim Jong-un has asked to be called Lil' Kim.
I don't think
That's
so.
That's true. All right, so here's what they put on their website, KFC. You tell me if you think this is inventive or not. I do. I give them credit because it'd be very easy for a major food chain to not do anything about this because why would you? You're in the business of selling fried chicken. You don't need to get political. But KFC has gone a little crazy on us the last couple of years. You've seen their TV ads. They're taking some chances. Here's what they put in response to the Donald Trump, Kim Jong-un back and forth. Here's what they put. This was on their Twitter, as the kids like to say. McDonald's leader Ronald just stated that he has a burger on his desk at all times. Will someone from his big-shoed, red-nosed regime inform him that I, too, have a burger on my desk, but mine is a box meal, which is bigger and more powerful than his, and mine has gravy? And there is a picture of Colonel Sanders at the end of the tweet.
Jeez.
What do you think? Is that a good move or a bad move?
It's funny.
It is funny.
But they don't have a burger at KFC, do they?
They have, I guess the closest to theirs is their chicken sandwich. I don't know.
That's not a burger.
It's not a burger.
That sounds like Wendy's. Wendy has a very snarky Twitter feed, too.
They haven't they?
Yeah,
I've read some of their stuff. They take some chances. So if you're running one of those businesses, you know you're going to upset some people when you put that down. But is it in the long run, is it a bigger victory to say, hey, we're hip, we're part of the times, we know what's going on politically? Is it a good move or a bad move, do you think?
I'm surprised KFC did it, because doesn't Donald Trump like KFC?
Yes.
That one, that's why it confuses me.
Yes.
Maybe they're trying to distance themselves from
that. I wonder if that's their polite way of saying, hey, you've mentioned us a couple times.
Stop it.
Right. Right, maybe. All right. One other quick thing about the Golden Globes I wanted to mention, and it'll probably come up in a little while. We're going to talk to Alexander Zabin from TV Guide and get his take on what's going to take place on Sunday. Here's a little side prediction of what you'll see. You will certainly see, as Seth Meyers pointed out, he is going to address it. There's no way you can do a show and not bring it up at some point. You've got all the biggest names in Hollywood in a room, and it's been the biggest story of 2017, so it's going to come up. The key is, how do you do it tactfully? How do you do it and not offend anybody and hopefully still make the show entertaining? Here's my prediction. I think you're going to see a record amount of people in their acceptance speeches talk about enough is enough. We need to change things. It needs to start now. Don't you think, Wendy?
Yeah, that's a good way of doing it.
That's the best way of doing it. And people always say during these award shows, hey, don't get too political. Thank the people you need to thank and move the show along. But in this particular instance, when that industry has been rocked so much, every industry has been rocked so much by sexual allegations of harassment, but it really is the right thing to do at the right time. Now, here's where it's going to get kind of crazy. When you see the Academy Awards in a couple of months, Casey Affleck won last year for Best Actor, right, for Manchester by the Sea. So the way the Academy does things is whoever wins Best Actor comes out next year and presents the award for Best Actress. And whoever wins Best Actress every year, they come out and they present the award for Best Actor.
I never knew that, Bill.
So that's been going on for quite a while, right? So, Wendy, I think we talked about this last year after the Academy Awards. There were several actresses who kind of snubbed him, Casey Affleck. Brie Larson was the one that was most notable last year. Really didn't want to have anything to do with Casey Affleck because he's been involved in a couple of cases where they paid off women to drop the charges against him. So next year at the Academy Awards, or in a couple months when the Academy Awards come out, it's going to be a very tense moment when he comes out to present that award for Best Actress. That's going to be an awkward couple of moments.
That is.
Really is.
Do you think viewership is going to be down just because people are kind of checking out, or are they tuning in to check out what's going to happen?
That's a good question. I think it's a combination. I think you're going to get a little bit of everything there. Wendy, hold that thought for just a second. We go to the Super Celebrity Weather Hotline because our friend Andy Avalos, a meteorologist superior over at Channel 5, is on the line with us right now. Andy, how are you, sir?
Well, at the moment, my hands are frozen and I'm thawing out in my car, but I'm well. Happy New Year both to you.
Happy New Year.
I understand that Wendy had surgery. I did not know that.
Why, would you have come to visit me?
I would have. Okay, well, maybe I would have pretended I would have.
But Andy, do you still do, for a while you were doing surgical forecasts where you would talk about the weather in the room where a surgery was being done. Are you still doing those or not?
I would have loved to have been side by side with you doing that. I would have held your hand.
I'll tell you, I did have a knee replaced, and I am not going out because this frigid freeze has been going on for how many days, and when will it end?
Well, you know, obviously today is day 11, if you've been keeping track, that we've had daytime high temperatures that have remained below 20 degrees. And so we're tying records. We'll make it through tomorrow, which will be day 12, with a daytime high that has remained below 20 degrees. And we all know our overnight lows in many locations have been well below the zero mark, and wind chill values have been in the minus 25 to minus 35 range. Even a few spots have pushed minus 40. So the good news is the relief is just over the horizon. So get by today, get by tomorrow. And there's a little mini January thaw on the way starting as early as Sunday.
Now, will this happen again? I thought it was supposed to be a mild winter that we would expect this year. Doesn't seem to be the case just yet.
Just yet. Well, this is my analogy. If you think about the freezer, whenever you open the door, you get that initial blast. And then if you leave the freezer open long enough, it seems to ease just a bit. Well, we have been bleeding that freezer up north now for a couple of weeks. So I think the pattern will shift, and already with this thaw coming in starting on Sunday. Now, we're not talking heat wave here, but relative to what we've been through the last couple of weeks, you'll definitely notice the difference. We should be able to go for 5 days in a row now with temperatures at least 30 degrees or warmer starting on Sunday. And I think either Wednesday, perhaps Thursday, will be the warmest day when we have a shot at upper 30s, maybe low 40s. Then we will trend colder again after that. But back to my analogy, once you bleed so much of this cold air off, it takes a while to recharge when you close the door on your freezer. So I think that we're likely to see the temperatures moderate as we head into at least the next few weeks. So I think that we'll actually get a milder spell, and hopefully the overall winter will not be as harsh as it has been.
I know now, Andy, I know you have to go. I just want to ask you really quickly, how long can somebody be outside and exposed to this very, very cold weather before they have to worry about wind chill? Not wind chill, but frostbite.
Frostbite.
Hopefully, yeah, on frostbite. Really, it's down to minutes. I mean, if you're outside for 10 minutes when it's this extreme, and when I'm talking about overnight lows into the early morning hours, it literally is a matter of 10 minutes or less. During the day, if you're appropriately dressed, you can be out for a period of time, maybe even an hour or two, go in, come back out, go in, come back out. But if you're outside for 30 minutes in this type of weather with exposed skin, you're talking hypothermia and frostbite and severe conditions. So it's so important that you cover your extremities, you limit your time outdoors, and one last thing, of course, check on the elderly and always bring your pets in.
Yes.
Extremely harsh weather because it's deadly for them as well.
When you say check on the elderly, you mean Wendy, don't you?
Stop it. Well, I had my knee replaced, not my hip.
Knee surgery, that's right. Well, one thing leads to another, Wendy.
It always does. So keep your extremities covered, Wendy. Andy, thank you so much. It's
Thanks,
always fun
Andy.
To talk to you. I wish it was under warmer conditions, but it will be soon.
Well, you know what? Cold hands, warm hearts, buddy.
That's what they say. That's what they say. That's our friend Andy Avalos from over there at Channel 5 at
Yay.
NBC 5. Thanks, Andy.
Okay, I love you guys.
Love
Happy
you, too.
2018.
All right, take
right
care.
Right back at you.
Bye. One of the nicest guys in the whole world, Andy Avalos. Wendy, I mentioned this yesterday. I usually I walk the river walk between our station, Tribune Tower, and the train station, Ogilvy. And now, this time of year, I run it. As soon as
yeah.
I get out of here, I make that run. But I can feel during that run the tips of my fingers, the tips of my ears, part of my nose. You can just feel it starting to tingle. And I always wonder, does that mean that frostbite is on its way? As soon as I start to feel that tingle, I start to get a little bit nervous.
I think that's how it begins. Yeah. And then it gets numb and then it falls off.
Oh.
So
if any part of me falls off. Thanks. Thanks. All right, let's take a quick break. Solid advice.
Thank
a
you.
A quick break and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We are joined right now by Alexander Zelbin, managing editor for TV Guide, making a return appearance here on the show. How are you, Alexander? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you guys. Hope you're staying warm.
We're trying our best. It's not been easy. It really hasn't.
Although it's a perfect time to stay inside and binge watch things on TV.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
If I only have... there was some way to do that. If they could just invent a way to watch every episode of a show at the same time. Alexander, I want to roll you into a conversation we were having earlier. The Golden Globes are this Sunday. It's the first major award show since the harassment scandal in Hollywood. It will certainly be addressed. Seth Meyers has said that it will be addressed. But it's going to be a very awkward evening, don't you think?
I think so, particularly because Golden Globes tends to be the boozy fun awards,
yeah.
and Hollywood is anything but right now. You know, there's a couple of ways initially that they're planning on addressing it. All of the women are planning on wearing black. The men have said they're going to wear black, which doesn't seem like too much of a stretch, and people have been making fun of them, frankly, a little bit for that. And Seth Meyers, of course, like you said, is going to address at the very least in his monologue, which... should be a very interesting thing to do because it's certainly no laughing matter in terms of what they're talking about. Ultimately, my guess is that they're going to refocus the awards ceremony a little more on the awards rather than people getting drunk in the crowd like they usually do.
Yeah, yep. What about Game of Thrones? There was an announcement made about the final season of Game of Thrones, and it's not going to air at all. There's not going to be even a single new episode of Game of Thrones this year. Is that correct?
Yeah, it sounds like they're taking a little bit of a page from George R. R. Martin's book and taking their time with releasing the next season. It's not entirely unexpected. It's a 6-episode season. The episodes are going to be longer. Rumors are that they're almost going to be movie length, each one. So it won't be coming out until 2019. But ultimately, you know, if that's what it takes to get all the effects and everything looking as good as possible, I'm all for it.
Alexander, this has been such a huge hit for HBO, Game of Thrones, from day one. It's just been a juggernaut hit. At some point, they're going to spin off at least one or two sequels, right? They've got to keep this storyline alive.
They're working on 4 of them right now.
Wow.
You know,
they've
been very careful to say that there's no guarantees that any of these spinoffs are ever going to happen, though, like you said, chances are at least one of them will. But they're taking a page from Hollywood blockbusters, where they'll often have multiple teams working on a big script for, say, a Transformers movie or a Pirates of the Caribbean movie or something like that. So they're working on 4 entirely different spinoff ideas right now. We don't know anything about them at all. No plot. plenty of people have speculation. There's prequel stories that George R. R. Martin has written about characters named Dunk and Egg. So maybe it focuses on them. Maybe it's something that takes place afterwards. We don't know. But like you said, it's too important for HBO for them not to follow this up in some way.
Did anyone even guess when they first announced that this would be a show, Game of Thrones, did anyone ever in their wildest dreams think it would be the huge hit that it became?
I don't think so. I mean, the novels had a diehard fan base who were really excited for it, but it's hit something in the zeitgeist. I mean, so much so that I was having a conversation in the office the other day. Amazon plunked down a couple of $100 million for the rights to Lord of the Rings to do a series. They don't have an idea. They don't have a creator. They don't have anything. They just bought the rights to do something with Lord of the Rings. And the conversation we're having in the office is that's all because of Game of Thrones. So George R. R. Martin, when he wrote the novels very clearly and very publicly, has been inspired by Lord of the Rings. But at least when it comes to TV, it's almost flipped, where Game of Thrones is the primo property and Lord of the Rings is the thing that they're almost spinning off of it in a way, which is bananas.
Yeah. Let's move on to one of your favorite shows. Oh, go on, Wendy. Were you going to ask one?
No, Bill, I was going to ask you if you've heard or seen anything about Black Mirror.
Yeah.
And Alexander, it's an amazing series, which has been likened to like The Twilight Zone or Tales from the Dark Side or something like that with a British twist. Would that be a fair analogy?
I think so. It's very, which you might be able to intuit from the title if you've never seen it before, it's very technology-based. So every episode takes a really, really dark look at technology. There are very few episodes that are cheery or have a hopeful, happy ending in any sort of way whatsoever. But surprisingly, the most recent season, which just hit on Netflix, actually has two episodes that personally I'd recommend just for at least being a little more positive. The first one is USS Callister. It stars Jesse Plemons from Breaking Bad and Friday Night Lights. Jimmy Simpson, who was on Westworld, is on it. Christine Milioti, who is the mother on How I Met Your Mother, is on it. And it's almost a parody of old Star Trek and fandom and toxic masculinity, but in a really dark way, in a scary way, but also a very fun way. And then the second one, there's an episode called Hang the DJ that takes a look at dating apps. And I don't want to say too much more about it, but it's very sweet and very romantic and definitely worth checking out.
So those two episodes, again, are USS Callister and Hang the DJ. Those are the two standalone episodes. If you've not seen it, these are good ways to indoctrinate yourself into that kind of bizarre world.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, just know that after that, you're going down a very deep, dark hole.
Yeah, I agree.
And see, Bill, I was telling you this before, and Alexander, maybe you could talk about this. I had my knee replaced. I'm coming back from surgery, and I started watching Ozark and then Black Mirror. And these are like terribly down, bad things and dysfunction. And it's like, I don't think these are good things to watch when you're trying to recover from a surgery.
No, absolutely not. I mean, to be honest with you, when my wife and I had our first kid, and I've heard this from other couples who have been trapped in the house with a new baby for a while, you tend to watch some very dark, weird shows. I have a friend who just had a baby, and he's binge watching Law and Order SVU.
Oh, good call.
So, I don't know. There's something that I guess.
What's wrong with us?
That we feel trapped. I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with humanity, but we'll get out of it somehow.
They've brought back a show, Alexander, that is one of Wendy's all-time favorites and was formerly one of mine, but I think it absolutely jumped the shark. The X-Files came back, and people are not happy with their biggest revelation, huh?
No, so I don't know.
It started already?
Yeah, it started a few nights ago.
Oh, darn it. Spoiler alerts.
I don't know how much we want to talk to this about the twist for those who haven't heard it, but there was a bit of a twist with what we thought was Mulder and Scully's kid.
Right. Don't say what it is. Don't say specifically what it is. But we thought we knew what was going on with their son William, but then we find out that we don't know what's going on with their son.
Yeah, exactly. And this is something that I think has been a longstanding problem, particularly with recent X-Files or later seasons of the X-Files, is when the show started, people were so into the continuity and the mystery. But the more they unravel about that and the more they reveal about that, the angrier the fans get. While I think they've actually had more success at this point with the standalone episodes, the Monster of the Week episodes, they used to be called.
Yeah.
Yeah. The good news for fans of this season is the first episode of the season, the last episode of the season are the continuity episodes. But between that, as far as we've heard, they're all Monster of the Week. So if you're really turned off by this new premiere, feel free to tune in for the second episode.
Their strong point was always those Monster of the Week episodes. You know, the show was very much inspired by an old show called Kolchak the Night Stalker with Darren McGavin. Chris Carter says, he comes right out and says, yeah, without that show, we don't have X-Files. I was so influenced by it. And they used to do Monster of the Week, and it was always fun. But when they'd get off on these tangents about the inside personal workings of Mulder and Scully, they kind of keep going south on us, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'm looking forward to whatever's coming next in the season, because that'll get back to that fun part. They'll be able to riff, try out different genres, invent new weird monsters. You know, if you look at the stuff from the last revival season, that's what fans spark to, not the things about the overarching mysteries.
Yep. Alexander,
you know,
they
went away for a while. You know, it's like we loved Scully and Mulder, and then they were out of our habit for a while. So I don't really care about them too much anymore. I just want to see the weird stuff.
Yeah, well, you're definitely going to see that coming up. It gets pretty weird. Good.
Their last episode from a season or two ago was so bad. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen on TV.
Yeah,
so bad.
You hated it.
It swore me off of the show. I hated that episode so much that I said, I can't even watch the show anymore. It was that bad. So I hope they refine their way.
I think they will. And I think I would take a look. What my feeling about these recent revival seasons is certainly, I know the networks would like me to probably say, watch it live and share it with all your friends. But ultimately taking a look at it afterwards and hearing from friends, okay, these were the standout episodes. These were the fun ones. That almost might be a better way to go at it.
Sure.
Because then you can really pick out the ones that popped for people versus, say, this premiere, which was divisive, to say the very least.
Interesting move. It's Alexander Zubin, managing editor over at TV Guide. We'll be back with more next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Do a cover story on that, Alexander, over at TV Guide. Our friend Pat Tomasulo, they gave him his own TV show. Could you do a cover story?
Guess not.
I don't blame you for not wanting to. Alexander Zubin is our guest. He's the managing editor of TV Guide, the publication that refuses to put Pat Tomasulo on the cover. I know this isn't...
Sorry about that.
No,
we'll get around to it eventually.
Please, whatever. All right. I know this isn't on the list of things you wanted to talk about, but I'm curious. There's a few revivals that are in the works. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you know about them. One of them is a reworking of One Day at a Time, but with a Hispanic cast. Is this coming up soon? Is it any good?
Yeah, it's great, actually. The first season is already on Netflix, and I believe I'm going to try to find the premiere date for you, but it's coming January 26th. That's the second season premiere. In a similar way to the original, which was created by Norman Lear, how that really embraced societal issues and looked at family in a very different way, taking it and bringing in a Hispanic cast has given it fresh new life, and it's really kind of wonderful. I mean, it's an old school sitcom in the same way that Fuller House came back and was kind of the same thing. But it's very heartwarming. It's really smart. It's very funny. And the good news is it's on Netflix, so you can watch every single episode at the same time.
Alexander, the novelty of it the first time it came out, One Day at a Time in the 70s, was the almost taboo subject of a divorced woman raising her own children. Everybody was shocked that a divorced woman could raise children on her own without a husband around. There's no more shock in that anymore. So what's the twist this time? Is there a twist?
It's not necessarily a twist, but in a similar way, it doesn't shy away from harsh realities of life. You know, you have an Army veteran is one of the characters, and so you're dealing a lot with PTSD and alcoholism and traumatic brain injuries, things like that. Again, it's not like the shocking twist in a certain way, but it just doesn't shy away from these things, and it deals with them in a very different and very smart way.
Any kind of Schneider, the superintendent, like they had last time, the super would come and fix not only their problems, but their plumbing?
Well, I mean, Stephen Tobolowsky is on it, if that's the kind of thing that you're looking
for. He's a Chicagoan. I know him. Yeah, he's great.
There you go.
Good. All right. So that,
does he have a tool belt?
He has to have a tool belt.
No, he doesn't have a tool belt. Yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, season two.
All right. So that's the new One Day at a Time, and still called One Day at a Time, right? They've kept that title?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. Now, here's a couple that were rumored, and I don't know if you know if they're coming back or not, but the first one is Mad About You with Paul Reiser. Is Mad About You coming back to TV?
That is, I would definitely categorize that as a rumor at the current time. You know,
that was the best show on TV. Didn't you all want to have their relationship?
Loved it. The Buckmans.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, as it is right now, they're talking about it. You know, all of these other revivals have done so well, and people are really looking for something nostalgic that they remember at the current time. So I would not be surprised if it comes back and they are talking to Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt about reprising their roles. But right now, it's not as firm as other ones, like, say, Will and Grace, which is currently on, or Roseanne, which is coming up later this month.
And Paul Reiser is not just sitting around. I mean, he had a very good year on Stranger Things, and he's done some good movie work in the last year or two. So he's been really busy lately.
Yeah, he also, as a producer as well, behind the scenes, he has a couple of shows. He has Red Oaks on Amazon, and I'm actually blanking on the name, but there's another show that he just sold to Amazon that should be coming up soon, I believe.
Good, good. All right, so now here's another show. I heard about this about a week and a half ago, and it was all over the place for a day or two and just kind of evaporated. Evidently, the president of NBC wants there to be more episodes of The Office. Do you know anything about this?
Again, this is very much a rumor, but I thought this was an interesting one. It's not out of the realm of possibility to bring The Office back in some form, because I know people look at it as, oh, it was this wonderful little sitcom. It starts Steve Carell, and then after he moved on, it continued for a while with Ed Helms at the helm. But it started as a British TV show, and there's been nearly a dozen international takes on The Office. So even though there are a lot more episodes in the United States, it's not like it's necessarily a limited concept, you know? So if they do bring it back for a limited run, what I'd be most curious about is which cast members would return.
Sure.
Because at this point, all of them are so busy with other things. I couldn't imagine, say, John Krasinski returning for more of The Office, but would one of the other cast members return? Mindy Kaling? Probably not, but I don't know. I think it would be interesting to see more Office, frankly, but that's even more of a rumor, I would say, than Mad About You.
You know, remember when they brought Arrested Development back and everybody said, well, the cast is so busy right now, how are they going to swing this? And they shot it in a weird way where they shot all the characters kind of separately. Could they possibly do that? Would that work?
I don't think that would work for The Office. I mean, it barely worked for Arrested Development, frankly, because it always felt very strange in those scenes. I guess if I was to play armchair producer or showrunner, I could see them doing standalone episodes focusing on each of the characters and their lives now. So maybe we'd see a Pam and Jim episode, and we'd see a Dwight episode, maybe even a Michael Scott episode. That would be kind of neat.
Except
but
the camaraderie of all of them is what is so unique and wonderful.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you'd really need to capture that. Plus, the way it's filmed is so much more realistic because of the nature of the piece that I don't know if they could do it the same way as Arrested Development.
I just want Creed back. I know it's selfish, but that's all I want is more Creed. Please.
That's
more Creed.
What it is. It's Creed in the lead.
The other one I think is coming to Hulu, and that's Animaniacs. That's a given, right? They're bringing that one back.
That is. That was actually just announced yesterday. I'm a huge Animaniacs fan, so very excited about this. But they are bringing the show back for two seasons guaranteed on Hulu starting in 2020. And this is Hulu's first family show, which from the TV Guide perspective, I thought was really interesting because they've had a lot of success recently with more adult shows like Handmaid's Tale. So now they're pushing towards family as well. They want to be your one-stop shop for everything streaming. But it'll be great. Steven Spielberg is on board as executive producer again. I don't know that they've firmed down any of the other cast or creators, but we'll see what happens.
It's one of those shows, even though it's geared towards kids, it's kids animation. It really is a very smart and well-written show. I hope that continues because every episode I ever saw of it made me laugh out loud. Really a funny show.
Yeah, it's great. It's super smart. It's essentially a sketch comedy show like Saturday Night Live, but with animation.
Yeah.
as long as they keep the title song line, Bill Clinton plays the sax, I'm into it.
Right. Very funny.
And I don't know if you know the answer to this, but when we had Curb Your Enthusiasm come back, what was there, a 6-year waiting period between that?
Mm-hmm.
Is it coming back again? Will we have to wait another 6 years? Any news on that for Curb?
It is. I believe there was an official announcement about that already, but they are coming back for another season of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
That's
in
good
6 years?
Yeah, I don't think it'll be another 6 years. I actually think it'll be sooner than that. Probably, it'll probably be sometime next year, most likely.
Oh, wow.
A surprise.
Excellent.
Later this year. We'll see.
Very, very good. Wendy, there's a listener that has a suggestion for you. You said how much you like to binge watch. Nina's on the line. Hi, Nina. How are you?
Hi. Fine. Thank you. Recuperating from hand surgery.
Oh, sister in surgery.
Right. That's why I took the time to call and suggest you watch Offspring.
It's an
Australian series on Netflix.
And about what, Nina? What's the subject matter on Offspring?
It's a crazy family, and the main character is a woman obstetrician. So a lot of it takes place on a maternity floor in a hospital. She has trouble holding her lovers. It's just a crazy family, but it's really well done, and it holds you. It gives you laughs. It makes you think. You don't know what's happening next. And I had a good time watching it.
And Nina, I don't know if you know this, but Wendy speaks Australian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, fluent. Yep. Well, thank you. I hope your hand's feeling better.
Thank you, and good luck to Wendy's knee.
Oh,
thank
so
you,
nice.
Nina.
Thanks, Nina.
Not me, but to my knee.
To your knee
the
only.
Offspring.
Alexander, do you know that show, The Offspring? Are you a fan?
No, I've actually never heard about it before, but now I kind of want to hurt my hand and check it out.
It's one of those shows that's somehow better with a hurt hand. Nobody knows why. It just is. Really, really quick, we have about a minute. What's coming up on television that you're looking most forward to? What's coming up in the next few days or weeks or months that you can't wait to see?
Well, there's a bunch of shows premiering. One that I'm really excited for is called Good Girls. It's going to be on NBC. It stars Mae Whitman, Christina Hendricks from Mad Men, and Retta from Parks and Recreation. And it's kind of almost like a Breaking Bad with women, where they try to rob a grocery store. That's their bad decision that they make at the beginning, and mm-hmm. It spirals out of control from there. And I think it's going to be pretty funny and pretty heartfelt at the same time, and the actresses involved are fantastic, so that should be awesome. Also, Black Lightning premieres on the CW on January 16th.
The superhero Black Lightning?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's does not back down from race issues, but at the same time is a really smart, well-done superhero show with a great ensemble cast. So it's unconnected, by the way, to the rest of the CW superhero shows.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're worried about jumping into that world, you don't have to worry about that for this one. So that should be very good. And then the next day on FX is The Assassination of Gianni Versace, American Crime Story, which is following up on 2016's The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
It's Ryan Murphy, who produced the first one, as well as American Horror Story. But it has a ridiculously amazing cast. And if it is even an iota as good as People versus O.J. Simpson, it should be something special.
Excellent. Alexander, we appreciate your time and hope you have a great weekend and a good new year.
You too. Happy New Year, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Alexander Zelbin, managing editor of TV Guide. You can go to tvguide.com and all the information is there. Break, Jasmine? Yeah, okay, a quick break and then we'll throw it to news and then we'll find out what your odds are of being the big Powerball lottery winner. We'll talk to a numbers expert that's coming up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, it seems like nearly everybody around us has what the kids like to call lottery fever. You don't have lottery fever, do you?
There are dueling jackpots. I will tell you that.
Yes. So you can play the local one, which is worth a whole bunch of money. You can play the national one that's worth a whole bunch of money. And at least two of our coworkers, Steve Bertrand is one, Judy Pilak is the other, 100% sure that they're going to win the lottery and then be rude to everybody around them. We have a guest to talk about the odds, and they're not pretty. Jason Gershman joins us right now, associate professor over at Nova Southeastern University's Department of Math, located in Florida. Dr. Gershman, thank you very much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Oh, great. Thank you for having me.
Let's.
I want to know if you're playing first off, Dr. Gershman.
I had not planned on it so far, but that may change come tomorrow.
When you hear people do this, when you hear people reason it out of how they have a really great chance of winning, they've got some inside track, what do you think when you hear those stories?
I think they're total nonsense. There is really no inside track. People buy books or find websites to help them pick numbers, but really it doesn't give you any advantage at all. It's just more of a placebo effect. You feel better that you may have a system, but in reality, there is no advantage.
It's 100% luck, right? There's not a single iota of skill involved in picking lottery numbers, is there?
No. I mean, to try to not share a jackpot, you try to pick numbers that are maybe less often played. Don't pick 11, 21, lucky numbers like that, 7. Play numbers that are maybe not birthdays, 32 or higher. Play 50-something in the 60s, numbers that are less often played, so you don't share a jackpot if you win the whole thing.
But if that's true, if you were going to choose numbers that are least often picked, wouldn't you pick something ridiculous like consecutive numbers? Wouldn't you just go all numbers in a row or something like that, or would that really be silly?
I mean, you could do that. If the numbers end up being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, those are actually very commonly picked, so you'll share many different ways. So maybe try picking numbers like 62, 63, 64, 65, 66 in a row like that. That's a little bit less often played.
It seems like the winning numbers do have at least one consecutive one, like a 17, 18, and then look for that in the win. That's all I'm telling
you. Yeah, you're right. Wendy, I swear, I was thinking this the other day because I looked at the winning numbers the other day, and I said to myself, they're all bunched together, and then there's a huge space, and they're bunched together again. Like most of us, in our brains, we'd go, well, you got to space them out. Pick something like in 1 to 8, and then something in the late teens, and something in the mid-30s. But they tend to fall into weird like clumps, don't they?
Is that the technical term?
Yeah, clumps, number clumps. That's what we call it.
There are number clusters, but they're if you look at any pattern long enough, you'll find clusters everywhere in life, even when they're just artificial. There really is nothing mathematical behind them. They're just by chance, and it does happen. But you do know there are quite often where there are numbers back-to-back or numbers even occasionally three in a row. But the chances of that happening over time are quite high. If you draw enough lotteries over enough years, you'll see those patterns will emerge. But they're really nothing to help predict the future.
If you want to win and you go the quick pick, that is probably the best way. Don't they say that most people who win do a quick pick and they're not hand-chosen numbers?
I mean, the chances are the same. I guess the quick pick, if you lose, you just blame the computer rather than blame yourself. So you
if you're one of those people that plays on a weekly basis, should you pick the same numbers every time or should you vary it?
Mathematically, it wouldn't matter, but personally, if I change my numbers and my numbers I usually pick, one, I'd be too upset to live with myself. So I would keep the same one.
So when you hear these stories of people buying hundreds of tickets or thousands of tickets, it's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, I know somebody has to win. That's the thing that people always point out. Well, somebody's going to win. You got to play. You can't win without playing. But really, to buy hundreds of tickets, that doesn't increase your odds that much, does it?
No, winning overall jackpot just marginally it increases 100 times. 100 times essentially zero is still close to zero. So, someone will win. The chance of someone winning is pretty high. The chance of you winning is almost zero.
So
this week, I think the jackpot may keep growing because the drawings this week, as Mega Millions is tonight and Powerball tomorrow. We have a lot of the country under a heavy snowstorm. People are low on cash from the holiday spending. There may not be that many tickets bought compared to a usual average drawing, so there may not be someone winning this week. May go on a week or two before a jackpot is hit.
So the weather is a factor in something like this, huh?
Oh yes. If the weather was nicer, people drive easily to the convenience store and buy tickets. Now they have to dredge through a snowstorm. They may think to themselves, is it worth going through a storm on icy roads to kill myself to go buy some tickets? They may not do that.
Do your odds go down as the jackpot goes up because more people are playing?
In mathematics, the expected value, the amount paid back, actually goes up because more money, more losing money from weeks past builds up. So actually, they pay out at the end of the day, will pay out more. So as the jackpot gets higher and higher, more the professionals and the big time gamblers will invest because they realize now that their investment is better than it would be when it was only a $40 million jackpot.
Dr. Gershman,
we're still a long way from there. We're looking at maybe $2 billion before it actually is mathematically advantageous to play it as opposed to not play it.
Oh, interesting. Huh. Interesting. Because you know numbers so well, Dr. Gershman, do you gamble at all, or do you realize that gambling is a game where the numbers are always, always against you?
I do it for fun, but I mean, I have a system and certain things, but my system doesn't work too well, which is why I'm a professor, not a gambler. So,
Can you give me a little hint? What is your system based on, though? What sort of system have you put together?
Bill's a former gambler and is just curious.
I used to gamble a lot, and I just want to know, because I don't know numbers anywhere near as well as you know numbers, so what would somebody like you, what would your system be based on?
I mean, looking at, for instance, horses going to the Arlington racetrack, looking at the racing form, reading the previous results to try to predict the future.
Yeah.
That you can do. As far as lotteries, really isn't much out there. That's just pure luck.
Can I tell you a system somebody told me once and it proved to be ridiculous? Tell me what you think about this. Somebody said that the odds of you losing 7 straight blackjack hands are infinitesimal. It's possible, but it doesn't happen very often. Just the way the cards are, you're not going to lose 7 in a row. And they said, here's what you want to do. You want to place a bet down, and if you lose that first hand, double your bet the second time. And if you lose that hand, double it the third time. And eventually, one of those 7 hands will go your way. You win your money back. I tried it. I lost 7 straight hands and a whole lot of money in a few minutes.
Yes, and in fact, that system actually has a name. It's called Gambler's Ruin. And anything that's called ruin usually is not a good thing.
Yeah, when he explained that theory to me, he did not use the word ruin. He just said, it's in your favor.
I actually use that in my classes every semester. I use that same example, but it is called Gambler's Ruin.
Okay, so if somebody goes out there and it spends like $10 on some lottery tickets and hopes to win, there is absolutely nothing wrong in doing that, correct? It's when you start spending hundreds or thousands of dollars, that's bad. But $10, who cares? You may win, you may not.
Yeah, it's an entertainment cost. If you go into the movies, it costs $10, paying $10 for lottery. If you get $10 worth of enjoyment out of it, then go ahead and do it. By all means, it's fun. But if you're spending the last $10 you have on it, don't do it. It's just not worth it.
So you agree with me then. I said this earlier. You're essentially, for those $10, you're purchasing a dream. You get to walk around for a couple of days thinking, wow, I can buy a jet and I can buy a swimming pool and I can buy a motorcycle. But you know realistically, your brain knows realistically the odds are so far against you. It's just a dream, right?
Oh, absolutely. But it's fun to dream, right? I mean, everyone has to have a dream, especially after a new year, 2018, a fresh start.
Yeah.
Why not dream about that private jet or that fancy sports car?
Yeah.
What would you get, doctor?
What would I get?
Yeah, see, I can't even think of it.
Can I guess?
Sure.
The coolest calculator ever invented.
Oh, yes. And a great new computer and a calculator, absolutely. Oh,
he doesn't need a calculator, Bill.
It's all in his head. It just works out in his brain. What would you get? Have you thought about it ever before?
Probably... I don't know, order a 10-pound lobster and celebrate.
Yeah, I can't think of anything either. I like the 10-pound lobster.
Wendy and I were saying yesterday, Dr. Gershman, that because we're fairly realistic people, that we don't even think in those terms, that you know that $1 billion isn't just going to be handed to you. You know, we just get that. So our brains can't even compute what to do with that kind of money. It doesn't even add up.
But in fact, also there's problems. There's taxes, there's all kinds of other problems from winning the lottery. Most lottery winners end up in ruins anyway because of the after effects of winning the lottery.
Yeah.
It's dramatic.
Now, so, no one thinks they're going to win both of the Powerball and the Mega Millions, correct? Because what are the odds of that? Like,
the chance of winning both of them is astronomically impossible.
All right. So don't think you're getting the billion.
But in fact, the games now are so similar. They're almost the exact same game. They're only one ball apart in terms of how many balls there are in each game. So essentially, it's the same game. There really is no advantage of playing one versus the other.
But what do you make of, because you understand numbers so well, this must really baffle you. Every once in a while, you'll hear a story about a guy or a girl who's won the lottery 3 times or 4 times. There was a story about a year ago about some woman who won 2 different lotteries in the same day. She won 2 different million-dollar lotteries in the same day. How does that happen?
And why didn't you marry her?
how much did they invest? I mean, if you can invest $1 million to get $1 million, then you have a net gain of zero. So I wonder how much they purchased.
Oh, good question. Very, very good question.
That's true.
Fine print.
All right, let's finish on this, Dr. Gershman. Because you know numbers so well, if you had to give one piece of solid advice to anybody potentially playing one of these multi-million-dollar lotteries, what would that piece of advice be?
Pick your own numbers. Pick numbers generally 32 to 60, 69 or 70 on the games, and then just relax and have fun and don't stress out. If you lose, just don't blame yourself. It's just not worth stressing out over.
You know, in all my years of buying lottery tickets, which really hasn't been that much, I never thought of going 32 and up because that is not going to reflect anyone's birth date. I never thought of that ever. Because usually, you know, you pick a birth date, which goes up to 31 only. I think that's great advice.
This way, because you do win the $1 billion or $500 million, you can keep it all for yourself. You don't have to share it with another.
Ah. Oh, that reminds me. What do you make of this? I used to work with a guy that whenever the lottery would get really, really high like it is now, he would buy two tickets and the same numbers on both tickets because in his head, he said, if I have to split the money with somebody, I'd rather split it with myself than somebody else. That's idiotic,
isn't
it?
That's stupid.
I mean, that's interesting. I mean, it doesn't change your expected value, but it's certainly an interesting theory. I never heard of that before.
Yeah, he swore by that. He's like, you know, somebody else is going to pick the numbers. Might as well be me. I'll split the money with me, happier than anybody else.
I mean, it's the same buying two of the same or two different ones. Mathematically, it's the same, but sure, why not? It makes him feel better. More power to him.
Absolutely.
It's all about feeling better.
More power ball to him. Dr. Jason Gershman is our guest, associate professor of at Nova Southeastern University's Department of Mathematics located in Florida. Dr. Gershman, we really appreciate your time. Have a great new year.
Thank you. You too. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. A quick break and then more show. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Bill, are you even going to play the lottery? Because I don't think I'm going to.
I'm not. The money's tainted, Wendy. If I won it, I'd feel bad.
No, you
like
wouldn't.
Like, I took it through illicit means. I can't do it. I need to earn my money. You know me. I'm a hard worker.
I'm not. I would take any money, but, you know, you need to plan ahead. You need to protect that ticket if you do win. I'm speaking to Judy Pilak and or Steve Bertrand. Wouldn't it be a hoot if they each won one?
That would be crazy. Yeah.
You have to keep it safe.
We've been told, for people who don't know, we've been told by both Judy Pilak and Steve Bertrand that they are the next lottery winner. So, whatever.
Good thing I'm friends with both of them.
Kim, you couldn't be in a better position right now.
I don't know. Judy will turn on you, I have a feeling.
Not me. Maybe everybody
That's
else,
true.
But not
Kim,
me.
Kim, Judy won a scratch-off ticket a couple years ago and turned on everybody. She won $8.
Woman? Well, did you see that woman that had the viral reaction to who was playing HQ?
Yes.
The 11 bucks? Yeah.
Yeah.
She went nuts for winning 11. That'll be Judy for the 8.
Yep.
All right. Well, if you do win, and, you know, listen, if you buy a ticket, I know you're going to go online and check the numbers as soon as it's drawn. You're going to have to. Keep it safe. Put it in a safe place. And do not sign the back of the ticket. Whoever signs the back of the ticket is the individual that has to claim the ticket and the proceeds. So make a copy of the ticket, get a tax professional and an attorney to help manage the funds. Do that right away.
That's good advice for all of us who are
who
not.
Who am I saying either, that to, Bill?
To the one potential winner out there.
No one's winning it, ever.
Well, somebody will win it, but the odds are against you. Kim, do you know the answer to this? We were discussing this yesterday.
Do I have to do math?
No, you don't have to do any math on this. I said that if I won, and again, the odds of me winning are very slim because I don't play, and normally you'll find that the best way to win a lottery is to play it, and I don't. If I were to win it, though, I wouldn't tell anybody except my own family. I would tell my wife and my children, and that's it. I wouldn't tell anybody else because I wouldn't want it to change my life, although I'd live in a castle made of chocolate so people would know that I want something.
And right. Ultimately, you have to reveal it because they have to show that a winner came forward and got the money.
You can stay anonymous, though.
You can. You don't have to do a press conference. You could just win it privately and enjoy the money.
Don't you want
to
hold the big check?
No.
You like the big check, Bill?
I don't like the big check anymore. There was a time where I would have liked the big check, but it hurts my back. I don't want to get a hernia from winning the lottery.
Then you have to pay for the surgery. You may not have enough money. I mean,
right,
you know.
Right. My HMO does not cover big check injuries. It just doesn't. I wish it did, but it doesn't.
Not a pre-existing condition.
No.
Don't you hope whoever wins it needs the money?
Well, you always do, but then you hope they don't blow it, because that happens too. They need the money, and then they don't know how to handle the money, and then they blow the money.
Right.
Bill Leff. If you win, call
yes,
Bill Leff.
Call
he will help you.
And Terry will give you $20 a day.
No, Terry has told me if I ever win the lottery, I get $30 a day.
Woo!
So,
well, that's not fair.
It's a big increase. It's a huge increase. I'm taking it.
What would you do with that extra
I don't
day?
Know what I would do with it. Right now, I'm just living on a dream, Kim. I have no idea what I would do with it. It would be very tempting, though, to have that much money. Those are all of those, Wendy, are very solid. Now, here's the thing that I keep thinking in my head. I wonder, of the people who win the lottery, I wonder what percentage of them win on numbers that are just randomly chosen. Like, they just go, give me 7, 14, 38. They just throw out numbers. And how many of them have reasons behind each of those numbers? You know what I mean?
I think the majority of winners, and I could be wrong, but I think it's computer-generated quick picks that are most of the winners.
Yeah, that's what I hear, too. Have you ever stood behind somebody in line at 7-Eleven, you just want to pay for gas or something, and they're buying lottery tickets, and they're telling the person working behind the counter the reason behind each of those numbers, and the person behind the counter doesn't care. They just keep smiling and nodding. Really,
yes,
it's your niece's birthday on the 8th. That's fantastic. Please tell me more details, please.
But you don't want to shatter people's dreams, Bill, so they listen.
Right. So true. Steve Bertrand now in studio. He is our next lottery window winner, ladies and gentlemen. Hi, Steve. Hold on, Steve. Let me find out. There's a button on here somewhere that has your name on it. Okay, try that one.
Hello,
okay,
Bill.
Donald
That's
Trump.
Steve. That's Steve. Right. Right. There's a large button with your name on it, Steve.
Well, I'll say the world.
So please please tell everybody listening they don't have to bother buying lottery tickets because you have already declared yourself the next winner.
Well, I think I will probably buy a ticket now that we've talked so much about it.
Yeah.
If I'm buying gas or something, I pick up a ticket.
You're there. It's easy.
Why not?
Why not?
You got to be in it to win it.
That's what they say. Yeah. All right. We'll check in with Steve in just a moment, find out what he has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Wendy and I are headed toward the stream, so if you want to visit us there, you can. That's for the next hour. I'll keep it right here on WGN Radio. For Steve Bertrand in the Business Hour. More next, Bill and Wendy, WGN.